To another episode of Anime Was Not a Mistake. I am Jonathan Kwiatkowski, here as always with my consummate co-host,
Dan Ryan.
Dan, 2021 did not disappoint.
No.
Well, it did disappoint, but...
Yeah, but checking our watches, we're a week into this new year, and boy oh boy, what a week it's been.
Yep.
Yep.
That's all we could say, but at least we have anime on our side.
We do. We do.
Only joy in our lives recently.
Yeah.
The world is crazy, but thank you once again for joining us. Any news? Any life updates? Anime-adjacent stories? Video games to share?
Well, actually, quite a few. Obviously, we're not the dumbass insurrection that happened at our capital. We're not trying to brush that over.
No.
But being an anime podcast, there's only so much that we can say that hasn't been said by smarter people, and getting real tired of witnessing these historical events. Let me tell you.
But the memes on Twitter, though. Oh.
Yeah.
Who would want peace when we have memes, Dan?
Yeah,
awful memes.
That's what counts, I suppose. It was just... It was... Like, I thought the worst thing in the... Like, I texted you to remind me to talk about the Ruggables fiasco. Mm. That was, like, Tuesday night. And I'm like, the week isn't gonna get worse than this.
Nothing's gonna happen.
And then Wednesday, sure enough, I said that out loud and, you know... The Pedro Pascal wishing stone granted me something else. So it was just, I don't, there are very few words for it. It was just witnessing just
another
a level
trauma
of,
in our history as millennials.
No, and I'm trying to figure out how to go about talking about it, but I don't
even know how to broach the subject.
But it's just like, you know, we've been saying this week after week, but obviously this has been a stressful time for many people, and it seems like the universe isn't pulling its punches in terms of what shit can be thrown our way. But as always, just, you know, stay safe, stay sane. Just communicate with people, enjoy yourself, and always take a moment to take a breath and just relax. And and thank you for joining us. You know, as my co-host said, as always, you know, if we can give some kind of escapism in this ongoing shit show, that is, you know, the past couple years. I mean, we're grateful to have that opportunity.
Of course, yeah.
So.
I'm grateful to just talk about shit that doesn't have to deal with the shit going on in the world for a few hours with you every week.
Yeah.
And you, audience, listening in. So, I mean, there's nothing I can say. If you see a Nazi, punch them, please.
Yeah.
That's all I ask.
Yeah.
Anyone, really.
Yeah. It should be common sense. Yeah.
It upsets me. But at the same time, they're idiots. Can we at least take... They haven't won the genetic lottery. They're idiots. If anything, there's some solace there. That's all I can say.
I'd say that's fitting.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, anything adjacent to anime that we could talk to, aside from politics?
No, actually a lot of things.
Ah.
Actually quite a lot of things. Obviously, that elephant in the room we needed to because, you know, we live here. It is a thing, and the chaos has not touched us personally where we are, but still witnessing this shit happening in the modern day and age is sobering, I guess.
Yeah.
But again, to all people listening everywhere, you know, we're here to help you chill. Mm-hmm. So with that in mind, I did come packing a lot of news this for this week. You want me to go first?
I mean, I only have three, so we can do round robin until we're okay. Done. Like, you, me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, first up, yesterday I partook in some new, brand new anime. It literally premiered on Friday. And that is Back Arrow.
Oh, never heard of it.
And it is, I saw it, you know, I feel like I've seen it in a handful of, like, Twitter previews, but then, you know, my favorite figure arts were posting, you know, character figures from the show, and I'm like, ooh, this looks, you know, colorful and pretty cool, so I'll check it out. Mm. And, you know, it's up on Funimation, it streams through Funimation, seems like it's gonna be, like, a weekly thing each Friday, but it's a very classic-feeling shonen anime. These people are kind of walled into this, like, it's called Ringland, I believe. Mm-hmm. It's this walled-in continent, pretty much. Mm-hmm. And every so often, these capsules from beyond the wall will come down and land. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they contain food, supplies, other things. And the way that the infrastructure is worked up is that there's, like, a peaceful republic on one side and an empire on the other side, mm-hmm. with some badlands in between the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
And the main shtick of the anime is that among the things that are occasionally sent down in these pods are these, I think they're called, like, warp rings. And you put them on...
So in the Sonic universe.
Yeah, well, thankfully distant. And it kind of grants you... depending on what shape your conviction takes, it grants you like a personalized mecha suit, pretty much. Like, probably not Gundam scale, but like a big armor. Robotic suit, okay. And they, you know, the designs are all pretty cool. One of them is named after Gigan. You know, there's the protagonist has a very classic shonen design with actually Ryoko's like hair. Little red hair, yeah. Thing fitting for today. But all the character designs seem super memorable. Good action, good little premise. I think it's only gonna run for like 24 episodes.
So that's a good run.
Yeah,
that's a show I can watch.
So it's, you know, I do recommend anyone to check that out, because I had a lot of fun with the pilot episode, so.
I'm interested because I heard that both Shaman King and Bleach are coming back.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's some anime that I'll watch this year.
Yeah.
Surprisingly enough. I mean, they're based on old favorites, so it's nothing really new for me. I haven't picked up a new anime in a good long time. But maybe.
Well, I mean, this was one of those things. I mean, we've talked before about what it takes to get us into a show. And some, you know, sometimes for me, if I see, like, really good character designs, I'll like jump, like that's enough to hook me into something. And in this case, who knows what'll happen, but
all right.
I like it so far,
if I may.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing that I watched this week, not anime but a lot of TV, good TV in fact. The first thing, I have to admit, Grant was right, Cobra Kai kicks ass. He recommended it to us. I think you would be very into this show. It's kind of like a soap opera, but instead of characters waxing poetically, you have adults beating the shit out of kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm all for that. I think that needs to happen more. In fact, this whole town, everyone in this town is basically a black belt. They're doing great homage to the original Karate Kid films.
Mm-hmm.
We've got the actors back in their, you know, from their prime in a new primetime show.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun, Dan. That's all I can say. It's like Power Rangers and Mad Max had a baby in a high school setting. I'm having a blast with it, and I think that this may be a TV show for you, Daniel.
Well, we'll see about that.
I don't know. Not animated, but with real people.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Mm-hmm.
And you?
This week on Tuesday was the start of Star Wars The High Republic.
Ah.
I've been talking this up for a couple weeks. You know, obviously, with a lot of the stressors of this time of year and everything, I haven't been reading as much as I would have liked. I've kind of, like, slowed down. But then when this first High Republic book came out, it's called Light of the Jedi. I've almost read like 2/3 of it in the couple days I've had it, because it's like everything I wanted from a Star Wars story, or a Star Wars piece of media, really. It just kind of, I mean, even if you're not familiar with the larger franchise, like I would say that it is a perfect place to kind of hop into it, because it's playing out like a high fantasy series in space. Ooh. Like we're seeing the Jedi at their peak, and peak hubris perhaps, like the Republic at its peak when it's still like a peaceful, you know,
Republic.
Yeah, Republic, you know, kind of.
I wouldn't know one of those with the current political climate.
No, of course not. Kind of unifying the galaxy.
It must be fantasy.
Yeah, and, you know, the villains are, they have more of like a Viking / Mad Max Marauder vibe to them, instead of the typical, like, you know, proto-fascist type Star Wars villains that we've only seen on screen for the most part. So it's a very different kind of conflict. It's a very, like, you know, it's a very fresh situation. And even then, there's a bigger existential thing, because, like, hyperspace, something's gone wrong with it, and without that, the galaxy has no infrastructure, so if they can't figure that out, they're doomed. Mm. And obviously we know that by the time the prequels happen, that'll be fine, but I'm assuming that a lot of the story is going to be about how the Jedi end up as the douchebags that they turn into by the prequel era, because at this era, which is another reason why I'm interested in it, this era, the Jedi characters kind of, each one of them can experience the Force as they see fit. They can wear armor, they can wear fancy clothing, they can take, like, cowboy-ish actions, or they can take more refined roles, and, you know, it does all this work to kind of set up how each of them goes about their tasks, pretty much. One of the main characters, Avar Chris, is a lady who experiences the Force as a song. She experiences kind of the flow of the universe as like an orchestrated gigantic song, and when she meditates and listens to it, if she notices any disturbances or any like sour notes or anything like that, then that points her to what she needs to solve.
Interesting.
So it tons of stuff like that. It is literally everything I wanted from like a new generation of Star Wars. I would venture far enough to say that something like this should have been the sequel trilogy. Like, this could have been easily applied to like a post Return of the Jedi Luke and company, you know, a threat for the New Republic, like this outline, this framework of what this story is, was like where were the creative minds that set this up when that
we needed them most, they vanished,
you know. But you can't undo what's done. No. But I am enjoying it immensely for what it is. It is just a fresh, like, no baggage, no, the closest thing to fan service is like Yoda exists, but he's not doing a whole lot. He's in his position of power already, but this is set in like the boonies of the galaxy, so he's not going to be involved in what's happening.
Yeah.
So everything I could have asked for, just a baggage free high fantasy in space adventure.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
I love that, and I love to read, Dan.
Yeah.
A good segue into my next topic.
Of course.
I'm not going to officially reveal it into our 100th episode, because I think that makes logistical sense in things, but I have a new solo podcast brewing, in which I read certain books of long lengths, chapter by chapter. And initially I went in wary, like, is this something that I can really undertake? Because the first book I chose was very long, and I've only read it a couple times, but it is my favorite novel of the sort. But after recording the first few episodes, I can officially say I am now a company shill. I'm working for pennies. I have got my first official ad sponsored by Anchor. So I'm happy. I'm making pennies, and I think it's some of my best work, Dan. Not to say that I'm going to kick you out of the room now. My ego has swelled 3 times its size, but I'm enjoying it, and I'm happy that I'm able to share my passion for this certain novel along the way. Of course, Dan knows, but don't tell the listeners
that'll be your reveal.
Yeah, but I'm excited for that. And to tie in with the next thing I watched, of course, what's another big book that I love that currently has an adaptation on CBS All Access, but The Stand. Mm-hmm. Stephen King's The Stand. Initially, I went in sour, as I told you, but they have improved things greatly. They're trekking through this giant book a mile a minute, and it feels like they're doing it in a way that's good for the source material, which is something that mm-hmm. you don't see in these one season one-offs for big books.
Yes,
a lot of the time they're doing things with characters like Tom Cullen and Julie in this recent episode that it's just exciting. Tom Cullen has a Dolly Parton t-shirt on and you immediately love him.
Mm-hmm.
And we have, of course, Skarsgård, Alexander Skarsgård,
right,
as the Man in Black. Really killing it. And James Marsden, awesome as always. He's, mm-hmm. I didn't realize how much TV he's in, but I went on a deep dive James Marsden kick lately, and he's in a lot of things.
He is.
He's...
Yeah. Sometimes not huge roles, but yeah. He's in a lot of things.
And sometimes not good roles, but with the competing Stephen King podcasts that I'm listening to, there's some give and take there with what they like versus what they don't like. And yeah. The consensus seems to be that it is a great adaptation so far. I believe we still have 7 episodes left, mm-hmm. and a good chunk of the book, but I'm just happy that they're keeping up the pace with it and making it exciting. I told you, and I think Grant was on for that episode too, they have a weird framing device where they started in the middle of the book, and then constant episodes after that are flashing forward mm-hmm. and backwards into time, which can be confusing if you haven't read the novel before, but... I've asked around for some people who haven't seen or haven't read the book before, and they seem to be picking up on things. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all I can ask for.
Right.
I'm just happy whenever there's a good Stephen King adaptation to ring in the new year with.
Of course. Yeah.
And you?
this is more of a, I suppose it'll be a splash in present company. Oh. I started Persona 5 Royale. I'm still trucking along through Cyberpunk. I have not neglected Cyberpunk.
Yeah. Well, you've got 600 hours ahead of you.
Yeah, no, there's no end in sight for either of these things. However, I got it on sale last week, and, you know, I no matter how much time goes by, every so often, I mean, you talk about it a lot,
yes.
But also there's people online who, you know, there's more evidence that it's probably one of the best rated games of the, if not one of the best rated RPGs of the past couple years.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, why not? I'll alternate between that and Cyberpunk.
I think you're gonna love it, Dan.
Yeah.
Welcome to my men's warehouse. You're gonna love it.
it is, you know, I mean, I only got so far first one.
I don't expect you to be done for at least a year, me. And I was playing at a decent pace when quarantine first... I think I finished that right before Final Fantasy.
Yeah.
So it was a long, long time coming.
Yeah, no, I remember because you chronicled it.
That's true. Yeah, on this very podcast.
So I love the, you know, the characters, the look of everything, the atmosphere. I think when I was playing through it the first time, I just got distracted by other things and I didn't
mm-hmm.
have the motivation to resume it.
Yeah.
But now I'm trying to streamline what games I play and mm-hmm. and try not to start as many things without finishing them. Yep. Voluntarily or not, because the PS5 does not have a lot of storage space. But, you know, I wanted something, a mix of different things going on to keep myself entertained.
I'm happy you started.
So I think they'll provide that. Yeah.
Of course, this means you can return to the classic Persona 4 now.
I can at some point, yeah.
It barely ties in. It's just in the same universe. That whole series is great, but 5 is streamlined and quick,
mm-hmm.
up and date with the kids. It's a quick and easy battle system. It's great. I do have a few guides that I'm going to recommend online just to get mm-hmm. the most bang out of your buck.
I was going to ask, without
spoiling anything, but that game. I mean, it's a long one, so it's not one that I'm going to return to in a few years, because especially I beat the original Persona
mm-hmm.
5, and then Persona 5 Royal came out, and I went, here we go again, Mamma Mia.
Yeah.
But I'm expecting you to have a lot of fun, and I'm glad you finally started it.
No, of course.
Converting you to JRPG. nation.
Yeah, it's, you know, I mean, and it's been a good couple. Dragon Quest XI was probably my game of the, not decade, but game, like, that, I've, besides Pokemon's, yeah.
And everyone keeps recommending it to me, but I need to find time in my life that isn't influenced by Cyberpunk, or Bravely, or things that are coming up, but I will do it before I die.
Well, yeah, no, it, you know, at your leisure, it is one of those undertakings, but, you know, that was a phenomenal game. You know, even not being, like, a, you know, a big Dragon Quest fan before that, that game really sold me on everything, so. But same with Persona 5, and, you know, same with, you know, it's, they're good for staying distracted during this stretch, so.
We could have a best girl discussion then, eventually.
We can, yeah.
Can't wait to hear your,
like, that mysterious masked girl who shows up in the new openings with that red hair.
I mean, the designers want you to fall for her, but behind the scenes, there's another best girl. Let's see if you can guess her correctly on the first try.
Yeah.
The last thing that I have to talk about, more TV. I finished a show, 7 episodes on Netflix, binge watch, finished it in a day, Dan. I haven't done that in a good long while. And people were recommending this to me. It's either Love It or Hate It. Currently on Netflix. I loved it. Extremely passionate about it. The Queen's Gambit, starring Anya Taylor-Joy, based on the book in the 80s, tells the story of a chess prodigy working her way up the ranks in the world during the 60s through 70s. Super into this. It's stylistic, and the backstory is crazy behind the show because apparently it was in development for 30 years, and people didn't want... The producers didn't expect people to like a show about chess and solely about chess, especially a woman playing chess, whatever that means. But I think this is a standout role for Anya Taylor-Joy, who I love because she's in all these A24 movies such as The Vavitch and currently... what's his face? Who's Lighthouse guy? It's not Ari Aster. It's...
Oh, I know who you're talking... Yeah.
Is it on my... Robert Eggers. There we go.
Yeah.
Robert Eggers' new Viking... story starring a Skarsgård, Nicole Kidman, Anna Taylor-Joy, everyone's in that cast, where, when, you know, when A24 starts releasing movies again. I'm just happy that she's getting a lot of acclaim for this. I don't understand why people would hate this show. It's slow, but at the same time, it's a good slow burn, if that makes any sense. I know you don't watch TV, so...
No, I don't, but I could.
I think you would be... If you squint, this is an anime, too. It's a 7-episode, hour-long anime arc.
Yeah. So, it just takes a lot of...
One of these days, Dan. I'll get you.
There's a mountain to get past.
Yeah.
I just hate TV, but this isn't TV. We're not on TV anymore. So
we're past that. Syndicated. I've lost that. 2 minor things that I want to mention. RuPaul's Drag Race, the new season is great. Slow start with like 5 different premieres because RuPaul owns everything lately. And what was the last thing I was going to mention? I guess if we talk, it'll come back up to me, but I feel like it was something important. Anyways, what else do you have to share, Dan?
Well, that was all the news I had. Yeah.
What was I going to talk about?
Well, then? Ash got a Dracovish.
Ash got a... The stupid fish?
The big fish with the dinosaur tail, yeah.
Well...
You got him.
That's just it's cute. Great. It's that's just great, Dan.
That's the only... I mean, and then they released that Gengar office sleeping bag thing.
Oh... The Gengar mouth.
Took the world by storm, sold out in a matter of, like, minutes. They gotta make more of them. They're making another round of the Appleton plush, too, that you can put in your driver passenger seat.
Safety belted in. Oh my god.
It's a good time for merch.
That Gengar that you could scream into the void in.
Yeah. If you need a break, just put it over your head and scream.
That's perfect marketing, Dan.
It is.
Why didn't we think of that?
I'm assuming that the next line of sitting cuties will come at some point soon.
And
into
then
Hoenn.
Be time to celebrate. Yeah. Well, if you have no more news to share, and I can't remember what I was going to share, I'll probably remember on a later date. Shall we get into episode 97, Kill la Kill, part 5, I think? I think it's part 5?
That sounds right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So today we're watching Kill la Kill episodes 19, 20, and 21. Of course it's been a while. We've had a lot of things present themselves, opportunities fall down into our laps. on this podcast. So a little reminder of what happened, a little refresher before we dive straight into today's three episodes. And then next time I'm hosting, we're watching the final four episodes, including the OVA that you may not have seen.
Yeah.
Because it's only included on the Blu-ray, allegedly. Yeah. And not on the internet anywhere.
We timed it out. Like, yeah, we're hitting it perfectly. So
so if you care to rejoin us, of course, you can listen to the last Kill la Kill episode. But a brief synopsis of what happened in our last watch: Satsuki turns against Ragyo, who then turns against Satsuki. And the secret that Ryoko is her daughter slash Satsuki's sister is revealed. Of course, Ragyo has also unleashed the power of the covers, an alien race in the shape of clothing, setting about the downfall of humanity. So this is the epicenter of the action, and we're going to fall into the denouement, the falling action, in these next three episodes. Of course, Dan, it's been a while, but anything to expect about this tail end of the series?
I mean, this series is just solid across the board, and, you know, I've never not looked forward to covering more of this show as we've gone on, as we get into these final parts. Ragyo, one of my all-time greats in terms of pageantry infused villains.
She's a pageant queen.
We get to see her more. Yeah. Well, she would be. She would be like a former Texas.
Debutante.
Yeah. So. we get to see her in action some more, I believe, in these episodes.
Yes.
And of course, we've already crossed the threshold into the big kind of tongue-in-cheek, like, alien invasion aspect, you know.
Yeah.
Where it all kind of starts spiraling, but in a good way, into craziness.
Indeed. So I'm excited, nonetheless, to enjoy these episodes with you. Of course, remember that we have four episodes next week, so you can expect a lot of twists and turns on the sewing machine, if you are operating it, working on it.
Well, I don't think that's how you sew things, but
I was in a good sewing school. You know, I had to go to theater school, they put me down in front of a sewing machine, and I'm all hands, Dan, I'm all thumbs.
It's nothing but caps.
My one flaw, I can't sew.
But you can sing.
I can sing from our supper. So let me go change into something more comfortable, and we'll meet you after the break, right?
I'd say so.
Well, we're back, and I'm here, of course, to ruin Dan's wedding day, as always, 100% of the time.
Well, that's your modus operandi, after all.
We'll get there. Of course, we're back to our regular length episodes, with three episodes that we've watched back-to-back, so a little bit shorter episode of anime was not a mistake that you're accustomed to as of late, but feels good to be back in the groove again.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like this. Not opposed to the other thing, I like them both, but it's a different good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're watching three episodes of Kill la Kill in our penultimate Kill la Kill episode itself. We're going to begin with episode 19, Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head, but any initial thoughts before we dive in, dear?
We mention it frequently, but this, you know, 20 or so episodes seems to be a really good sweet spot for how these stories play out, because nothing in this series feels... I mean, there's goofy episodes, but nothing feels extraneous. Yeah. Like, even near the end, when a lot of stuff is happening to kind of maintain the drama, it doesn't get boring, because it's held enough back to, you know, like, obviously, in this episode, we get, like, the outfit swap thing that, you know, like, anything that they could probably get the viewers speculating about, they pay off. Yeah. Like, they show what would happen if this happens, and, you know, it's, you know... We're almost there, we're almost at the finale, but it's still doing a good job of keeping that drama and the energy going. Mm-hmm. So
I will say this was the hardest anime series that I've watched and recommended in a long watch that I've had cutting episodes.
Yeah.
Because we're watching the final 7 episodes back to back to back. I could not cut any of these because they're all unique in their own way. And as you said, they're action-packed. It never lets you down. It's a good series with that. So, episode 19, Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head. Let's get into the plot, and remember to stop me if you have anything to say, Dan. So, we get a recap of what happened our last episode, where Satsuki was betrayed by Ragyo, and Ragyo betrays Satsuki and reveals that Ryuko is her daughter once more.
Mm-hmm.
She then uses the covers to enslave the residents of No Joy Academy.
And as we kind of learn the tier list, but it's like, when they're just regular covers, they're connected to the threads that go back to
the... cut,
But once you get a person inside one of them, they turn into the buff suits, which are, you know, the main foot soldiers, I guess, in this case.
So the covers are capturing almost everyone, and the Elite Four is fighting there, using their life force powers to prove themselves. At this point, Mako gets captured by one of these said covers, and of course, Gamagori is there like, cut the thread, Mako!
Good shipping.
Yeah, great shipping, but he's stopped and she is consumed. Our best girl is consumed and all hope appears to be lost. But Satsuki, in her final thrall, manages to explode the whole stadium, sending everyone into disarray.
Well, yeah, because the last episode that would have cut away from is Ryoku Ragyo is literally holding her heart.
Yeah.
And she's like, you know, you have to be my daughter. It has to be true because how else would I be doing this? You know, and holding her still beating heart in her hands, and then she drops it and it just, you know, she regenerates. So it's, you know, it's kind of, you know, much to Ryoku's distress that she's part life fiber. Yep. So
huge explosion rocks us all, and then we get a passage of time to a month later where the covers are perusing Hanoji Town and looking for any stragglers that may remain in this city, and we find out that Nudist Beach has taken upon themselves to fight the covers in order to protect Japan, and none other than Matero Monkonshok is still in Hanoji City looking for his sister and surviving with Guts, the family dog, by picking up scraps off the street and being street smart in general. While he's there, he's stealing tomatoes one day to eat, and he is almost captured. Him and Guts are almost captured by a pair of suits in the form of the covers, but they are saved by none other than Nonon Jakuzare.
Who has joined Nudist Beach and is in, you know, like the... Once they switch sides, they all get, like,
the skimpy,
I don't know what they're called, like, the ammo.
They're
pack.
Like bandoliers, almost. Yeah. I don't know what they call them nowadays, but they're the pockets of ammo that you strap around, and they're wearing nothing else. So they've accustomed to their, like, I do make a joke like, look, Dan, I'm Antifa, which is great. It's fashion forward. I love it. I stan.
Yeah.
All the power to you. This is what the Antifa wants, Dan. but Jakuzare does rescue Mataro and brings them back to the Nudist Beach hideout. We find out that Nudist Beach has been keeping things going with the rest of the Monkonshoko family, and that Ryuko is in a coma at this point. While this is going on, though, Blade Regalia dude Sanageyama is fighting in, like, Kanto using other street toughs. And we do get a connection to that backstory that's how he started, and then he joined Satsuki's plans.
Yeah.
And it's just honorable that they fight to the end and they are eventually
consumed. We're gonna get our chance to be heroes, and, you know, so honor among, not thieves, but toughs. Street toughs. With the Kuwabara haircuts.
Yeah. it is also revealed that Lady Satsuki's sword has been split into two different weapons, one by Jakuzare and then one that's passed down to Sanageyama in order to fight, because it's the only thing that can sever the life fibers and defeat these things.
They are down to their last, like, they have the DTR Robo, they have the, I think, it's been a while,
it's
I apologize.
Describe Mohawk
guy's name, I'm forgetting.
Oh,
His, like, the three, like, claw blades that he uses, like, again, the two small swords, one robo, I mean, comically, they keep unveiling other secret weapons, but then, Sagiyama's Goku uniform was the last one they had.
Yeah, and it falls apart at the seams during this scene. They do reconvene once more. Gamagori is shoved into a comically small nurse's room where Ryuko is sleeping. We do get more shipping. He does appear suddenly behind them, though, and the Mankan Shoukos reconvene with Matero Mankan Shouko. We also see that Satori the butler has joined the cause. Mm-hmm. He's there to make tea.
Yeah. Well, so, he's the Alfred to, you know,
Batman.
Satsuki's Batman. So, you know, he clearly cares.
I do like the sayings on the wall in this nurse's office because it's feel the wind on the nipples of your heart, which speaks to me.
Well, and then Mrs. Mankanshoke, her darting glances.
Gives a little glance at what Matthew Mercer's character is wearing in this. They all blend together. There's a lot of names. We're jumping back on the bus again. So meanwhile, Satsuki is hanging naked in a cage and being held captive by Ragio Kiorin. She's given a lot of bad touches in the scene, and it's not good. A lot of ass slapping. Not good.
Yeah.
Nope. Don't like.
Well, just reinforcing that Ragio is like a sociopath, and the reason why Satsuki is still alive is because there is some other greater plan or scheme that Ragio needs a living body for. Yeah. So
Ragio also explains the backstory for Soichiro Kiorin, Satsuki and Ryuko's father, how he was blown up. Just a missile hits the car.
On these Japanese highways, it just they bazooka'd danger. His car. Yeah. But then luckily he quickly fashioned a charred corpse costume and then zippered out of it. Kind of like PETA doing the cake painting to turn himself into a rock. But he escaped, and he broke his spine.
Own back,
grew out a beard, got an eye patch, and a mouse.
The old man that we all love and respect, and raised Ryuko as a child. Of course, Ragio expresses her rage at Satsuki in that she's not the daughter that she expected her to be.
Yeah.
Essentially. And that she's going to try this other daughter once more. The Elite Four soon take a stand against the covers.
I apologize. But Satsuki does call her out on, like, why she needs other people for this plan. Mm-hmm. And Satsuki name drops, what is it? It's a word that keeps coming. It's another Ketsu. It's like we hear her say, like, oh, you're doing this for,
I don't know.
We get another Ketsu name dropped, and it's so that's clearly there's a third big uniform, perhaps.
Maybe. The Elite Four soon take a stand against the covers using a new device called the Emergency Rescue Suction Device.
Yeah.
And its basic principle is to go up to someone next to them and suck out the human within them, severing the connection with the covers. This device is first used to save Mako from her imprisonment, thanks to Guts and Gamagori in identifying that specific cover that happened to be there. Mako is extracted, and the cover then loses its energy. I did like this Gamagori quote, "In human stead, I strike clothing down." Which, very overdramatic, but that's just like Gamagori. When the covers start to use disruptive noises in defense, Ryuko awakens from her slumber, destroying the covers and rescuing most of the prisoners in one shot. She then shows hostility towards Senketsu, feeling she herself is an inhuman monster.
I apologize. I just did a quick Google search. Mm. Shinra Koketsu.
Ah.
And I read because Shinra is obviously, they're the baddies Godzilla. And something else.
Yeah.
No, Final Fantasy.
Oh, yeah, that too.
Yeah.
I was thinking of, what's Godzilla called? Shinra Godzilla, right?
Shin Godzilla. But Shinra is the, Satsuki name drops Shinra Koketsu. Mm. And we know I enough that that's that? A bad thing.
Hmm. Ryuko reveals herself as an inhuman monster and states she will never put on Senketsu again. So she's also dressed in that Piccolo Trunks Gohan
cloak.
Yeah, and nothing else, and just fighting. Yeah,
which is just a bed sheet, but it has uses. So. Yeah,
and she manages to steal a purple motorcycle and rockets off to Hinoji Academy in order to fight.
Well, it's just like, it's a very, because the way that this series uses color, it's like whenever Ryoku is like tempted by that side, the color purple is there. Because the
other... it's the opposite of the scissor blade.
Yeah, yeah. The other half of the scissor blade is purple. I think there's something else with purple in another scene, and then the motorcycle she steals is this big pronounced, like, you know, it's like a chopper motorcycle, but it's purple.
Giving
also,
us Uchina vibes.
Yeah.
A lot of Uchina vibes in these episodes. And there is a post-credit scene for this episode where Satsuki breaks off a fake toenail in order to expose a Coke toenail, which is made of some material that she's sharpening to a point.
Yes.
Mm. Episode 20, Far From the Madding Crowd. Maddening? It's not maddening, it's madding.
Madding crowd, yeah.
What does madding mean?
It might be a pun that we need to look up.
It might be like a clothing pun. I know they're all named after songs, too.
Yeah, so. well, yeah.
Yeah. So we begin with the Mako monologue, where it's not the Ryoko I know, after expressing her resentment towards Senketsu, that you're not a different person than the person that I've come to know. Please wake up and just put on Senketsu and join the fight again.
Yeah.
Ryuko is confronted by Mako Manganshoku, who states that she is no longer being herself. Ryuko responds by saying that she is in fact no longer the same after finding out the truth that her parents and her life had her with a life fiber infused body, so she does not feel human.
Yeah, so she basically that like every time Ryoko, in her words, in her anger, she's like every time she sees Senketsu, she is just enraged because she feels like she's a monster. She feels like, you know, the Goku uniforms weren't the weapons created to destroy their own kind. I was the weapon created to destroy my own kind. And it's, you know, she cannot. It's a lot of existential shock value there. So she's not processing it well.
In a very Jonathan move, Ryuko is confronted by Nui Harame and Ragio, who appear as remote-controlled body doubles composed of life fibers. Mm-hmm. So we get that fictional, I'm not really there,
yeah,
but I'm here at the same time. You could slash me, but I won't bleed. Jonathan moment. And they torment Ryuko. Nui and Ragio invite Ryoko to face them at Hinoji Academy. Meet me dead at the bubblegum shrimp from the hours of 2 p.m. to 3 p.m.
The ruins of the bubblegum shrimp.
And we'll settle our dispute there. Mikisugi, who's the guy who... No, that's Matthew Mercer, isn't it?
Yeah, or... DTR. Yeah. That's Ikaro.
Who's the other guy? He pops up. Don't worry. He'll show up again. Warns Ryoko that it's a trap, and she doesn't listen and destroys his DTR. His poor Datenbori Robo.
Which, again, I'm assuming is a pun, but I still haven't looked into what kind of... Because I'm assuming that he's insisting on the DTR thing, because it's a play on something, but I don't...
We're too innocent.
We gotta, yeah. Our research department is...
Dan, it's just a bunch of raccoons.
Working the little buttons.
She tells him how much she's tired of following him around, and she hates him for not telling her the truth and her past all along. What is this Rufus Wainwright song playing in the background I put down at this point?
It's
like the sad piano melody, like, go away your own way.
And I'm pretty sure this is like a rule of three thing, because we get three of these. Like, the screen does like a life fiber transition. Mm-hmm. This really, really, like... I don't want to say out of place, but different
shot
feeling song plays against like a black and white montage of sad things, then false happiness, and then, you know, the third time we get it down the road, it's the truth.
Then she, Samugu, that's his name,
yeah.
Samugu Kinagase, appears, and she fights him as well. Ryoko leaves to Hinoji Academy on a big stupid bike, as Dan instructed me to put down. You go 5Ds up in here? Maybe. Back in the Nudist Beach's secret base, Akaro, Mako, and the Lead Four are discussing what to do in light of Ryoko going off on her own. Senketsu decides that he must go to Hinoji Academy to meet Ryoko. Mako is able to feel his intentions, even though she can't hear him, and decides to go to Hinoji Academy, taking him with her. Inamuto is able to hack into the Academy's security system, and the footage reveals that Satsuki Kyurin is still alive and scraping her toenail on the ground, showing her will to fight still. And the Elite Four is initially like, oh my goodness, I can't look at her. And Sanageyama is like, I'm blind, tell me what's going on.
Yeah.
But they do say, oh, she still has the will to fight. We should have never doubted her in the first place. We're going to join her at her side.
And it's a cool scene, because even though they're all kind of talking over it and distracted, like, once I think Satsuki looks at the camera and you feel her, like, they feel her will as, like, because they're her friends. They're, like, her real family. And they sense, like, even the blind guy senses her resolve through the camera. So, they, you know, it's a cool little unifying moment.
Yep, and they realize her resolve, and these special toenails, which are made of the same material as Bakuzan, and she's going to eventually use them to escape. Akaro then decides to use the naked soul called the Naked Sun in Japanese dub. I mean, yeah, it's the same thing, yeah, but it's just over-the-top dramatic, and Dan loves a big boat.
So. I do love big,
big boat. Nudis' Beach's last resort weapon, a massive ship, and all our characters unite on the main deck of the ship, proceeding to Hinoji Academy.
It looks like a big Xenoblade, but I'm assuming it's supposed to be, I'm thinking it's supposed to be shaped like a sewing machine, maybe, but
a needle.
Yeah, but at first it looks like a Xenoblade.
And at this point I said the Munkan Shoko's reveal, honey, we're Antifa now! Yay! They pop out of, like, the porthole. And they're like, whoa! Meanwhile, Ryuko arrives at Hinoji Academy and fights Nui. The nudists arrive and attempt to attack Ragyo using missiles, which she proves are useless. She gives the casual.
Shrugs, like, you know, just, you know, does the little head dodge thing, and then she's like, you know, dusting off.
Satsuki uses all this commotion to escape completely naked, using only her false toenails as a weapon, and after defeating multiple covers, Satsuki is able to exit Hinoji Academy through a back door and join her friend. She's surrounded by a massive amount of covers, but is saved at the last minute by Ira Gamagori, Sanagayama, and Jakuzure in a helicopter, and they are able to cover her up and take her with them.
Yeah.
Nui plays mind games with Ryuko. We're not so different, Dan, you and I.
Well, literally. That's literally because we finally get Nui's, like, her gist, which is that she was a completely artificial life form made with life fibers and no human DNA, but she's, like, shaped into one.
She's a failed experiment.
Yeah, and failed in the sense that she can't wear, like, uniforms. Mm-hmm. She can't, like, interact with any other life fiber besides herself, so...
Ryuko does proceed to stab Nui through the heart, and we think Nui's dying. She's screaming in pain, and then she goes, just kidding! I can't die. She rips out her own heart and reveals to Ryuko, like, see? Yeah. Look! We're the same person! did she voice... Now, Dan, this is a reference that... But does she or did she voice Arthur's Muffy? It sounds so familiar that it wouldn't come up unless it was very close in my book.
Yeah, no, I feel like... I feel like I've recognized her voice from a lot of things.
No, she's been in a lot, but specifically after watching the Muffy Corona skit that Arthur did, where it's like, Muffy, you need to put on a mask, but I hate the way they look. That's not the point, Muffy. Listen, I go through the Arthur annals
We'll look that up.
I'll look it up and I'll maybe get back to you if I remember for next episode, but it did sound like Arthur's Muffy. You can't fight the threads of destiny, sweetie. Nui also reveals that after Ryoko's supposed death as a baby, Nui herself was created by Ragyo in an artificial uterus made of life fibers as part of her third attempt of making a life fiber infused human. So they are technically kind of sisters or half sisters.
Soul sisters, they say.
Soul sisters. Ryuko is surprised by Ragyo, who presents her with a modified version of Junketsu. And while that fight was going on between Ryuko and Nui, she was actually taking measurements and stitching her in order for her to be consumed by the outfit that was presented to her. And she does go into this Junketsu, and we get a whole Kingdom Hearts deep dive with her memories getting altered in black and white scenes.
Well, yeah, no, and again, it's like, it's another black and white montage, and this time it's seemingly, you know, it's the stuff that we recognize from, like, the end, like, the original end credit sequence where Ryoku is going through different life events by herself, and Ragyo is inserted into them as if she was, like, a present and loving mother throughout, you know, Ryoku's entire life.
Me picking up Dan from kindergarten.
And it concludes with, like, a fake wedding day, coming back to that whole thing that Junketsu is a wedding dress. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, you're literally marrying the life fiber now, so.
Yep. So while she's in fake memory land, we go to the Naked Soul, where Satsuki is resting and enjoying a cup of tea made by Mitsuzu. The ship's radars detect an unknown incoming object at high speed. A light blue ball light collides with the ship's deck, and it is revealed to be the now brainwashed Ryuko wearing Junketsu. So yes, Dan and I can switch outfits, yes. And I am no longer the villain. Dan has been the hero so long, he fancies playing a villain. Samugu attempts right,
well, to... Yeah, well, yeah. Personal dream aside, mm-hmm. if I achieve nothing else in life, yeah. Someday I would like to voice or act as a stupid one-shot villain.
Yeah.
If be it a it's Steppenwolf.
Fun, try living every life as a villain. Every like, day in your life as a villain.
You know, that would be a dream come true just to play a one-note, incredibly goofy, mm-hmm. like...
You don't have the range.
The world would be beautiful. Yeah. You know, like that, just to do that once. Yeah. Like a Steppenwolf or what have you. Just like, you know.
Is that a theater reference?
No, that's a Justice League reference, even worse. So.
Justice League reference, the Steppenwolf Theater.
But yeah, no. I do like this, you know, I mean, it. Of all, like, the, you know, because we've had a few moments in this series where Ryoku kind of gives up or is her, you know, her mind is clouded by something, but... It's done really well here because it's like Raggio presents her with a life that would have been comfortable.
Yeah.
Like she shows her, you know, this is what life would be like if you didn't have to fight constantly.
Mm-hmm.
And it's done very well. Mm. Of all, like amongst anime brainwashings, this is like, we understand the reasoning here. Yes. So.
Samugu attempts to face Ryuko in his prototype upgraded DTR, which is more powerful than the original one she destroyed, but is quickly defeated in like a perpendicular right angle that he just falls. Oh no! I've done it again. When Ryuko is about to kill Samugu, Satsuki appears, now wearing Senketsu, and challenges her to a fight. So we're going to get sisters in opposite outfits fighting for the next episode, which yes. is a huge thing to leave on, but we still got one more episode to go, Dan. We've got episode 21, Incomplete. fake memories of Raggio and Nui. There's a creepy new dream that's occurring at the same time as this, where Nui, Raggio, and Ryoko are all nude together, saying, like, maybe you should, like, accept your life as it is now. Like, I want to make an outfit for you.
Yeah, and Ryoko is seemingly giving into it, like, yeah, this is comfortable.
We do
this
get Raggio's nice. Chin and an ass.
Yeah, what might be chin and ass, a little depending on how they're positioned. So,
that's
yeah.
a pointy chin, Dan. What's that doing down there? humans exist to serve clothing. And when Ryuko is brainwashed, this is before she attacks the Naked Soul, she does kiss Nui for luck.
Yeah.
So, lesbians!
And yay! Nui does a little, like, leg pop, like, oh my, yeah. like, you know, so...
all due to existential terror, I don't know why I put that down, but the end game is here, darling. And they admit, like, this is the final few episodes.
Oh, Raggio says yeah. that. Raggio's, I gave her a dose of existential terror, and that was what she needed. Because she says that, like, the life fibers respond to danger and fear better, so she, you know,
yeah.
planted those ideas accordingly.
Satsuki Kirin and Senketsu begin their fight against Ryoko Matoi in order to try and regain her memories. We do get a Mako monologue where she interrupts the Elite Four who are about to jump in, but she goes, no, wait, I have an important message from Lady Satsuki that you need to hear.
Yeah.
Bakuzan still remains, and Satsuki does a great job. We can assume that she duct taped the two blades together in order to make the one blade again. She's fighting with two, right?
Fights with two. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. I was initially a little bit skeptical for these two blades becoming one again, but she does fight with two, according to Dan. But they find themselves overwhelmed. What did I put down here? Let me try and read my writing. I put down controlling. Oh well, I can't read it. Senketsu seems to be holding back, not sinking, and the hearts. But even though Senketsu's still talking to Ryoko, and
yeah.
she's the only one that can understand him as a piece of clothing, he says, we may not be sinking, but our hearts are still as one.
Well, yeah, that's the main argument that Senketsu is making, because Satsuki, even though she's wearing Senketsu, she can't hear his voice, and it's also an incredible strain on her body. Mm-hmm. Like, they're not synchronized, so
every a lot of blood.
Every minute they're fighting is a it's risking killing Satsuki. But he's like, she's doing this to try to snap you out of it. Mm-hmm. So,
and this scene is composed of a lot of like overlapping Polaroid shots that every time someone talks, another Polaroid goes over the screen.
Yeah.
Like, it's those square boxes things. The Elite Four join the battle in order to protect Lady Satsuki, and they wind up distracting Ryuko so that Ira Gamagori can use his mighty suck device in mm-hmm. order to suck Ryuko out of Junkets.
Yes.
And we reveal that Mako's plan was so well delivered because Lady Satsuki wrote it down on my hands.
Yeah, there's like a diagram and walls of text. Yeah, so.
And then we get this is my modus operandi, Dan. I would cheat in order to win.
Do anything to win, so.
However, they are interrupted by Nui Harame, who reveals that forcibly removing Junketsu from Ryuko will kill her, so that's not an option.
Because their fibers are literally sewn together now.
Mako's not having this, and she literally dives into the action, just flings herself off the main deck onto the lower deck in order to protect her friend. Meanwhile, flash sideways, Ragio Kirin is using the powers of covers to give the life fibers meteorite the power of flight. She consumes and witnesses the consumption of all her subordinates.
Yeah, like her board of executives, pretty much.
That are all the same character model. Yeah. And the one butler dude, she and her secretary reveal that 100% of humanity now wears life fiber-based clothing.
Yeah, this is the cocoon sphere genesis
phase
of the plan.
Yep. So. Yep. And this cocoon emerges directly onto the surface in a very melodramatic way, and instead of tainting the cocoon with her body, she stands on a handkerchief in order not to smudge.
Oh, yeah. That's why. Oh, I didn't even realize.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, no, that makes sense.
We can't be tainted by our shoes, Dan. We walk on the earth.
That's extra, but I did not realize she did that. So. Yeah.
Back to the Naked Soul, Mako monologue number 2, don't give up, I know it sucks, you're still the same Ryuko, you're still the Ryuko I know.
Yeah.
So we get another friendship thing, and as Mako is trying to reason with Ryuko, Senketsu puts himself in the way in order to protect her from a slash from Nui.
Yes.
He's like, I'm gonna kill this coconut head and get her out of the way.
Yeah.
They're protected, and Satsuki talks to Nui and says, if you're so confident in Ryuko winning this fight, why haven't you given her the other half of the scissor blade, eh?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which, calling them out, you don't have confidence that this is going to work, so.
Satsuki manages to make an opening on Ryuko's body in order for Mako and Senketsu to dive inside a la Kingdom Hearts style, where they're sucked inside Ryuko's open wound and transport themselves into the world of her black and white memories, where she's at the wedding day, in the chapel with a rose husband mannequin that falls over immediately when the doorknob strikes him.
Yeah.
And Mako is essentially like, why are you living life? This isn't how you want to live. I'm your friend. Accept me. Ryuko says, if you get in my way, I'm going to kill you. She does slash Senketsu and Mako, but apparently that doesn't do anything but cover the sequence in dripping blood.
Because we're supposed to assume, I guess, that this is like mental. It's still a shocking little moment because you don't expect Mako to get slashed, but apparently, it is just an illusion, so.
Mm-hmm. When this is bloody, we think that Mako and Senketsu emerge from the body once more, and they think that all is lost, but it is revealed when Nui turns around, and she has the scissor blade thrown through her heart. It's like, what the fuck has happened here? That Ryuko is back, and she rips off Junketsu because she does not want to wear it, and in order to wear Senketsu once more.
Yeah.
In order to fight Nui, and that's where our episode ends, Dan.
Yeah.
Yeah. Action-packed little 3 episodes, setting up perfectly for the finale. But any closing thoughts before we sign off?
No, I'm just excited for when we get to cover the big finale. Mm. I mean, it's an excellent series. Yeah. I think we
say that enough.
Yeah, we wholeheartedly recommend this one.
Do we have a tasting time?
We
didn't do with the previous episodes?
Well, for Kill la Kill, that would be, I mean, I would say, it has vibes of, like, a shonen anime, it has vibes of a lot of different types, but I think a person who enjoys this might like a more meta little experience, because it's got, like, the sailor outfit trope, but it tweaks that, it turns it on its
Utena
head.
It's got Utena vibes.
Yeah. Well, no, a lot of Utena vibes. Yeah. It's got, like, a lot of, you know, little random sci-fi references, a lot of, you know, even with how Dr. Matoy looks, he's like an old-school anime character, and it's difficult to pin down with this
one. I think it's a mass-appealing anime.
Yeah.
I think that a lot of people like this. If they can get aside, if nudity isn't your thing, maybe not this anime, but it's done in a cheeky, tasteful way at the same time.
Yeah.
They don't show anything too explicit.
Yeah.
It's just rounded shapes.
Yeah, it's either used for humor or for intense drama, so it's not like it's, you know.
It doesn't leave a bad taste in the mouth.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Next time I'm hosting, I can't wait for Dan and company, you out there in podcast land, to join us for the finale we've been working up to in lead of our 100th episode.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very excited to get the penultimate episode to our 100. But Dan, before we go, is there anywhere that our audience can find us on the social media?
You can follow me at King_Danis. As well as our adjacent Anime Was Not a Mistake podcast Instagram account on Instagram, of course.
And you can follow me, Jonathan Wykowski, at Losing My Mind JK on Instagram, Drink and Read JK on the Twitter, and my other podcast, Nightcaps at the Theater, taking a hiatus, but I think we're coming back eventually. Good things take time, and I've got a little something cooking in the vault. Another podcast if you're interested in reading long Russian novels of the sort.
Careful, you're getting spoilers.
What could it be? I've said too much. With that, Dan, what are we watching next week? I'm excited for our 98th episode.
Well, I might be speaking through hubris if I'm relying on the mail.
Uh-oh.
But if everything goes according to plan, it's like a 50-50 coin toss. If the mail comes through and I get what I am anticipating,
I promised.
We will be actually doing a very new thing. We will be watching Lupin the Third, the first, the CGI animated anime that I think premiered last year. And has kind of been dazzling folks all over the place because of how good the animation is.
You mean we're returning to our first episode?
We are, yeah.
All comes full circle.
Yeah, you know, let's hope that it makes its way safely into my hands within the week.
And if not, I guess it'll be a Kill la Kill episode.
No, it'll be, if not, I'll just do Saint Seiya. I have Saint Seiya in the holster.
Okay.
But pray it doesn't come down. joke aside, like, we have, there's plenty, we have backup plans. But right now, the plan is for Lupin the Third, the first, which I am incredibly excited to showcase.
Same. Goody goody gumdrops.
Yeah.
Well, see you then, Dan. Don't lose your way. Don't lose your way. Here at Anime Was Not a Mistake, we have one mission. Whether you be a magical girl, a giant fighting robot, a raccoon, or just a fan of podcasts in general, we hope to one day arrive at a definitive answer to the following question. Is anime a mistake? While we obviously don't think so, there's no harm in expanding our weeb horizons now, is there? As of late, our humble little show is devoted to the analysis and discussion of movies, series, and episodes that show off that powerful art that is animation. However, none of this would be possible without listeners like you. If you like what you hear on Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and more, then why not support us on Instagram at Anime Was Not a Mistake Podcast, or on Facebook at Anime Was Not a Mistake Pod. We promise to go halfies on the sake with you. Join us, won't you? This time and the next. And with that, Dan and I leave you with a to be continued as the chill anime beats play. Sayonara!